Hello, 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 everyone. You're now tuned in to Unorthodox Real Season 3. Yes, I'm back and better, I would say. Welcome to the last Monday of February when you're listening to this, hopefully. And today I have a special guest. I have Lindsay Archer here with me. Lindsay, please introduce yourself.
Hey, everyone. My name is Lindsay. I am currently in my gap year, but I'm also a nonprofit founder and the author of a children's book. And I'm so excited to be here on the best podcast.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so happy that you could be here. So first, I start off with the rapid fire questions, as most of you guys know. So first question is, what is one thing you would put on your bucket list right now?
That's a great question. I feel like most people would probably say this, but I really would love to travel right now. And if I had to go somewhere, if we weren't in this pandemic, yeah. I would want to go to New Zealand. Like that, I don't know why, but that's like one of the places I really want to go to.
New Zealand, I heard they're dealing with Corona way better than us.
Yes. And I'm just like, everything, they just happen to handle so much
exactly.
better. Like, It's beautiful.
So are you a morning or a night person?
I am a night person. Mm-hmm. I feel like most people who come on your podcast say they're morning people. Yeah. I understand the importance of waking up early. Yeah. Like I wish I was that person who like wakes up at like 6:30, but I'm just not that person. Mm. I understand the importance of waking up early, but I definitely go to bed. Like last night I went to bed at like 3:40.
Oh my god. It's
not ideal, but I wake up at like 8:30. So like I really don't get sleep. So I understand the importance of waking up early, but I go to bed super late. It's really bad.
Oh wow. I was going to ask, okay, so since you go to bed late, do you wake up late? But it seems like you don't. Oh my gosh, so you barely sleep.
No.
That's not good.
Really struggling out here. It's not good at all.
So what is one thing that annoys you the most?
One thing that annoys me? That's a good question. I think the classic, the most basic thing is probably just like even hearing people chew, even with their mouths closed, but being able to hear people chew. That annoys me. Like that, my sister used to get on my nerves with that all the time. And I used to just like, I had to move away. Like anytime I would hear her chewing, I would just have to move away. It was that bad. But yeah, I think that's probably the one thing that's probably my biggest, like the most immediate thing.
Okay. That's understandable. So what is your favorite hobby?
Favorite hobby is, I love reading. But outside of that, I always love creating. I've always loved drawing, painting. I'm that DIY mom, that person who like will probably be that person making all of my kids like costumes and stuff. So like I really love DIY stuff. So I found that during the pandemic, that's one of the things I really enjoy doing. So creating stuff, reading, I love collecting vinyl records.
Oh, okay.
I've been doing that for some time.
What's your favorite vinyl record that you own?
My most cherished one is Thriller by Michael Jackson. That one, like I'll protect that one with my life. I love Michael Jackson. And that one actually isn't one that's, you know, recently printed. That one's like my mom's original from back in the 80s. So like I cherish that one. Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's my favorite.
So what is your lifelong dream?
I feel like when you're on the pre-med path, like your lifelong dream for the longest time is just like becoming a doctor. So for me, I guess still to this day, it's becoming a doctor. But outside of medicine, I would love to build a school one day. And I don't think I've ever told anyone that, but I'd love to build a school one day. I don't know where, I don't know when, but I'd love to do that.
I hope you achieve that dream. We would love to see a Lindsay Archer school. Not saying that you would name the school after yourself, but we would love that.
I would love to.
What new
that,
technology do you feel like will transform the future?
That's a good question. I feel like, you know, people who are in tech probably would have more, like, much better answers than me. Like, I heard Sasha's interview and she said, like, AI. And I was like, oh gosh, I could never, I could never give such a, like, spot on answer. But speaking in medical terms, I guess, I feel like telemedicine, like, it's, I feel like it's here to stay. It's not like, you know, crazy, like innovative, like AI, but I feel like that's definitely something that, especially with this pandemic, I feel like that people have realized just how important telemedicine is in like bridging disparity gaps, but also it opens up so many other disparity gaps too. So I feel like that's going to be here to stay for some time. And hopefully there'll be more with like development and making it more, just better than what it is right now.
So the final rapid fire question is, what is your favorite song right now?
Favorite song? I listen to a lot of music and I never have a favorite song, but I think I can look at what I most recently added to my playlist and that would give me a better idea. Most recently added song to my playlist is How Much Can a Heart Take by Lucky Day.
Oh yeah, I like
that
song.
That's my most recent song added. Yeah.
That's a good song. So now it's time to get into the meat of the podcast. So because my podcast is called Unorthodox Real, I ask every single guest, what makes you unorthodox? So Lindsay, what makes you unorthodox?
I have to say everything. Everything makes me pretty much like my whole, like everything from my journey to becoming a doctor, having a nonprofit, writing a book, every single thing is unorthodox in my opinion. I feel like none of these things I ever, outside of becoming a doctor, anything else I never imagined myself actually doing like, when I was a kid. Or, you know, like I feel like my path to getting to each of those different things has been very, the non-traditional path. So I feel like pretty much everything about me is unorthodox, I guess.
So let's talk about that. So like when you were a kid, you knew that you wanted to become a doctor. So like, at what point were you like, okay, so, because I know, well, I guess you can talk about this, like how your dad's a doctor. And so like, you've been able to see what doctors do, how they operate and all that stuff. So at what point were you like, okay, I could actually be more than just a doctor. I could be an author. I could be a founder of a nonprofit. So when did you have that realization?
Yeah. So I guess, I think that was probably, wow, I never thought about that. I think that's probably later part of high school. I might've started thinking about like doing, I think definitely after, like right after I graduated, 2015, graduated from high school, I started thinking about creating a nonprofit. And I think the whole idea of me, because when you're a kid, like you say, oh, I want to be a doctor, I want to be a teacher, like I want to be an Olympian. Like that was all the things I wanted to do. I wanted to be a doctor, an Olympian. I was really, I love watching track and field. So like that's one of the things I wanted to do when I was a kid. And like all these other things. And when you're a kid, you know, people tell you, oh yeah, you can do all those things. And then as you get older, kind of reality sets in and it's like, oh, maybe I can only do one thing. And so, but for me, my mom was always that person who kind of showed that you can do like as many things as you are interested in, and have an impact in all those places. So I guess it, that kind of was, my mom has inspired me in that sense and knowing that you can literally do anything you set your mind to. You don't have to just do one thing. But of course at the core of that is always like, I always wanted to be a doctor. But I would say it was probably right after I graduated from high school, that's when I really started thinking about Root Strong and creating a nonprofit. And the like the whole idea of creating Root Strong was totally different at that point than it is today. It was like, you know, at the time I was about to start college. I was entering college as a biology major, but I was really passionate about like history, culture, those kinds of things. And so eventually I transitioned to majoring in African American studies, but Root Strong was supposed to be at the very beginning. You know, I realized that not a lot of kids were being taught Black history in the ways that it should have been taught. So I really wanted to make sure that kids had a program that could teach kids about history and about their culture while also doing all these other service projects and things like that. So that's where Root Strong started back then. And it kind of just grew as I figured out my footing and what I was most passionate about in advocacy and things like that. So yeah, that's a long-winded answer for fine. That one.
Next, I want to dive more deeper into Root Strong. So you kind of talk about the early stages. So like, when did you realize, okay, I'm going to actually start a plan to like have steps into making this nonprofit something, like other than just like it being an idea? When did you start, okay, let's start doing initiatives and things of that nature?
I think the very first project we ever did was in 2016. Mm-hmm. And I grew up with my parents always telling me stories about, like, you know, being a first gen, you hear a lot of stories about like your parents and how they grew up. And so growing up, you know, I always heard my mom and dad talking about, like, you know, my mom came from the country areas. She's from Kingston, but was raised in kind of the more countryside. And so kind of hearing some of the things that they didn't have access to. So, you know, even books, shoes to go to school, uniform, like all these different things that they didn't have access to, having, you know, not having running water, not having electricity, all these different things. And so growing up hearing that, and not only hearing it, but seeing it, because I went back to Jamaica so often. I think the earliest I went to Jamaica was like 6 months old. And so, yeah, my parents are like, oh, we're just going to connect her to her roots right away. But yeah, I heard those stories growing up. And so I always had this connection, like, if I can do anything, being in the position that I am here with all the privilege that I have here to give back, then that's what I want to do. So we did our first project in 2016 for a school in Jamaica, a woman-run school, woman-led school, and it's a what they call an infant school. So that's like, I wonder, like maybe three-year-olds to about five-year-olds go to that school before they start primary school. And so it was a woman-led school, and they basically created like a, out of like what we would call here a trailer, and connected these multiple trailers to create this little infant school for these kids. And they had like, it was just such a nice school, but they didn't have a lot of the resources. So my mom and I, it was just, you know, my mom has always been the person that taught us how, me and my sister, how to always give back. And so I remember we went to, like, a few days before we flew down to Jamaica, we went to a dollar store and just like bought as much school supplies and stuff as we could. We didn't make a big fuss out of anything, didn't make, you know, try to get donations or anything. It was just something we wanted to do. And we went to Jamaica, packed all those things in our suitcases. And that was that. That was our first project supporting that school in Jamaica. So that was where it first started. And then from there, it was more so just, if there was a need that we saw affecting the Caribbean that no one was giving much attention to, then we felt we wanted to do something about it, because 2017 came and Hurricanes Irma, Maria, they basically ravaged like so much of the Caribbean, the eastern part of the Caribbean, and they affected the United States as well. But a lot of times when it comes to natural disasters like that, you know, affect the Caribbean first, especially those smaller islands, people don't talk about it. And aid and, you know, FEMA and all these different organizations don't necessarily support those small islands that, you know, really don't have the infrastructure to support themselves in those circumstances. So that was our next project. We, you know, did these. It started off like, again, my ideas come at night. I don't know why. I guess that's why I'm a night person. So I remember like laying in bed, and I was really frustrated because I saw on TV, like the news was reporting about, you know, the effects of the hurricanes and how it was affecting, tourists in those countries. And you would have like, you know, the newscasters like interviewing the people who have their vacation homes in Antigua and all these different places. They lost their vacation homes. They lost all these things. But the people who live there, who literally lost their entire livelihoods, like their actual homes, they just weren't given that platform to speak or to share about what they were experiencing. So I remember laying in bed and I was like, I wonder what we could do to like maybe help in some way. And so I remember this random name just came to my head, like Barrels for Barbuda, which was, Barbuda is an island that was really, really badly affected. Yeah. Like they were basically flattened after the hurricanes. And Barrels, like if some of your listeners aren't familiar with Barrels, but if you're first gen, you probably have sent back like packed barrels to, you know, your family back home. So for us and our family in Jamaica, we'll send down barrels packed with like rice and soap and toothpaste and all these different things to send back for them so that they can, you know, have, and it lasts them like a really long time. So what we wanted to do is do like Barrels for Barbuda, and because Barbuda at the time was the only island that was so drastically affected. So we wanted to pack these barrels of donations and such and send them to Barbuda. And after that, we realized that so many other islands were being affected with these waves of hurricanes that were coming back to back to back. So it became more so just a Caribbean initiative at large.
That's so amazing. So I want to talk about the Project Literacy in Jamaica that you did when you basically helped revitalize the school and you sent books. So please tell the people about that.
Mm-hmm. So in 2018, we went back to my mom's community and we realized that they didn't have a library at all, like no libraries whatsoever. The closest library was about an hour and 45 minutes away, or about an hour and a half away, maybe, from that community by car. But most people in that community live in it's a rural community. So a lot of people don't have access to transportation. They don't have their own vehicles, a lot of people. Not to say that some of them don't, but a lot of them don't have their own cars. And there's, you know, most people will take buses. But of course, that requires money. Yeah. So we wanted to help increase the access to books. And my mom has always said for the longest time that she wanted to build a library one day. But that seemed more so like something we would do, like, I don't know, when I'm established, when I have like, you know, my MD and like I'm actually working and all those different things. But I don't know, I came across at the time, little free libraries were becoming more and more popular. And so I was like, why don't we, you know, just for now, like put up a little free library in the community, and at least the kids can have like, we'll stock it with books and we'll give the school some, you know, extra books that they can always switch out for the little free library. So that was 2018. And we didn't really like, you know, tell anyone that we were building this little free library. We kind of just did it. But I remember at the time I was a research assistant with my PI, and she is the best person ever, Dr. April Carconi at Wayne State. She always was really interested in knowing more about me outside of just me being in her lab. She was always interested in me as a person. So she would always ask me about like, what are your plans? What are you, you know, what, how's school, all these different things. And one day, I guess I brought up that we were going to Jamaica in the summer, and she was asking more questions about it. And I was telling her about us building this little free library. And it just so happened that she was the president, I guess. I don't know if that's what you call it, but like the president of her Girl Scout troop.
Oh, okay.
And she literally was like, oh, yeah, you know, I'll have our girls, you know, collect books. And that can be like a project that they can do over the next month or so, I think. And so she collected like all these books, like over, I think it was about over 200 books she and her Girl Scout troop collected, and way more than we actually needed. Mm-hmm. And so that was where we got all of our books from for that little free library. That was 2018. And so we went to Jamaica. We didn't build the library before going to Jamaica. We went to Jamaica, went to the Glengough is where my mom is from. That small community. And we had a local carpenter from that community build the library, because we didn't want to like, you know, we didn't want to outsource anything. We wanted, like, if we're going to do this for the community, let it be by the community. Yeah. So we had a local carpenter, build the Little Free Library. It took some time. Yeah. I will not lie. It took some time. Jamaica works on island time. Yeah. So you know, here in America, we're just like, yeah, get it done by like in 2 days. In Jamaica, it takes like a long time. So eventually it got built and it was really nice. And we stocked it with the books and I was able to present it in front of the kids at their graduation. And that was really, really nice. And I hate public speaking, but I had to like give this impromptu speech. Like the principal's like, oh yeah, now we're going to have Lindsay Archer come up and talk about like this library. And I'm like, oh my God. And so it's already really like, you're already self-conscious. Like I can speak Jamaican Patois and all those things, but you're really self-conscious when you're really aware of your American accent when you have to speak in front of, you know, everyone else who speaks, you know, with their Jamaican Patois, Jamaican accent. And so you're just really critical of the way you're speaking. And I just remember being like, oh my gosh, like they're probably sitting there in their seats calling me a Yankee. They're probably like all these different things. But yeah, that it was really good. And it was really nice doing that. So fast forward to 2019, we decided that it was like, okay, well, this little free library is great, but it only can hold so many books. And we really want something that's more like more present, I guess, more something that can really be there for generations to come. And so, like I said earlier, my mom had always said she wanted to build a library, but that wasn't something that we were planning to do anytime soon. And so we ended up kind of telling people in the community that, you know, what would an actual library do for the community and for the school? And so they were really excited to hear that we would be willing to take on that project of bringing them a library. And so that's what we worked toward. So from 2018, after we came back from Jamaica, after building that little free library, to I think July 2019, all that time we had like less than a year to actually plan building this library. And at first we were planning on building the library in this one room that they already had. But at the last minute, it turned out that that room was so dilapidated basically that it just couldn't be used. So at the very last minute, we had to switch and build the libraries in these two rooms that luckily were already there. They needed a lot of work. The roof needed a lot of work, but we were able to use it. And also there was a underneath that's on the second floor. So on the first floor of that same building, there was another room that they wanted to make into the computer lab. And so it was kind of nice. Everything kind of worked together in that, you know, at first we were going to build the library in this one separate building that was extremely dilapidated. And if you look at like early pictures of like when we were first talking about, we're going to build a library on the Rootstrong Instagram page, you'll see that original room. And that was where everything was going to be built, but it was just so damaged and so dilapidated. And we just didn't have the funds. We're just like this small little mom and daughter organization that we ended up not using it. So we built it in these two rooms, and it was nice that we were able to actually separate the library. So one for the younger kids and one for the older kids. So we could actually separate the books in that way. And it became kind of fun that we got to decorate them in such unique ways. So one was like a outer space themed room, and one was like a reading rainbow room. And then the computer lab, we were able to buy 6 brand new computers. And kind of just everything was created by, if not donated by, people right here in the city. The things that were built, so like the bookshelves, the desks, everything was done by like people in the community right there in Glengough. So that was really, really nice to be able to not swoop in and, you know, do stuff on our own, but actually work with the community.
Honestly, when I saw the library, I was like, wow, you guys did this in this amount of time. It was beautiful. I was amazed. I was like, you guys really built a library. How long did it take?
We were only there for a week and a half.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So I want to ask, so how many people's lives have you impacted through Roots Strong and all the initiatives that you guys have done?
Wow, that's a good question. I don't even know if I've taken count really of how many people we've served. I think on the website, I think last year I updated how many kids we had served at the time. And that was just accounting for mostly people that we served through the library. So that was about a few hundred people. I know that the number of kids at the school where the libraries are is about 300 kids. But since then, we've done Christmas projects here in Detroit. We're getting ready to do a literacy program here in the city. But yeah, I would say a few hundred. I don't know an exact
number. Whatever number it is, there's a lot of people's lives that you guys have impacted, and it's truly amazing to see. So I want to talk about Fly Dr. Fly and the book that Lindsay authored and helped illustrate. But you can speak more on that. So what was the inspiration behind the book?
So the inspiration, the quick answer is my dad. My dad is the inspiration behind it. I was a freshman in college when I first had the idea. It was 2016. I'm pretty sure it was spring break. Yeah, I didn't do anything for spring break. I was at home, and I remember I was in my first pre-med class that semester. It was a bio class. And I just remember out of the 300 plus kids, there were maybe three or four of us in the class. And I just, it's hard for anyone else to understand if you're not Black, particularly Black, being pre-med. It's, it's something that's very unique to being Black in this space, that you can very easily feel isolated and feel there's no one else here. There's not that camaraderie, because there's not many of us here in this space. So I remember just wanting to I've always been inspired by my dad's story to becoming a doctor. It's not something I tell people very often. If people know me, they know I don't, I won't tell people that my dad is a doctor. Not because I'm ashamed or anything, but just because I know, there's certain things that people, you have this privilege and blah, blah, blah. And that's true. I'm very aware of that privilege. But at the same time, my dad and my mom were very much aware of letting us know that, their stories have never been easy. And so more so than the title, the grandeur, I guess, that comes with the title, I've always been more aware of the humble beginnings that really was my dad's story of becoming a doctor. And so that story has always inspired me. And so that coupled with me being in school and wishing that there were more people who looked like me in the field, I wanted to create a book that young kids could read and see themselves in medicine at an early age, because so many kids don't know that they can be a doctor. I didn't have my first Black doctor until I was 17 or 18.
Wow.
And that was because I just needed to go to a dermatologist. So that wasn't even my primary care physician. So I really wanted to make sure that kids were able to see themselves in medicine at an early age, and kind of using my dad's story, one of his first introductions, because, I always grew up with my dad telling me the story of why he first got interested in medicine. And that first introduction to medicine was, he was walking with my grandmother in Jamaica. I think they were going to walking to the bus stop or something, walking somewhere, I don't know where. And he saw this bird, and it was injured or something. And he was really, really interested in it and wanted to just somehow help it. I don't know what his thoughts were, I kind of took that story and kind of reimagined it. And it wasn't the national bird of Jamaica is a doctor bird, which is in America, it's a hummingbird, but it's a very specific hummingbird in Jamaica that is really, really beautiful. But it's kind of a play on words, the title, kind of inspiring kids to fly with those doctor dreams, but also the kind of story carries on with this bird, this injured doctor bird, And it just so happens that Jamaica's national bird is called the Doctor Bird. Oh, wow. So that was kind of the whole story behind it. Yeah.
So I want you to talk about the process of creating the book. So it's 2016 and you have this idea. So what are the next steps that you take to mm-hmm. get it to where it is now? You can do like a whole timeline rundown because I'm interested.
All right. So 2016, I literally just had a Word document open, and I had the idea for the book, and I was just writing based off of my dad's story and just like reimagining it, making a creative version of it. And if I'm being honest, the story now is I wouldn't say drastically different, but it's a lot different than what it first was. So I remember I was just writing out the story and like writing out the pages, and I printed it off. And I remember I was like circling, like, you know, certain lines and saying, okay, this can be one page with one image. Cause I was planning on doing the illustrations myself, my dad and I.
Yeah.
And so I circled each, you know, little, you know, coupling of words and sentences, and was like, okay, this is going to be one page. This is going to be another page. And so after all of that and kind of revising it and all those different things, I think what I did afterwards is I did a lot of research on like what it was like to self-publish, what it was like to, how do you illustrate your own book? How do you do any of those things? And how do you do so in a way that looks like super professional? Cause I really wanted to make sure that the book was really like professional and like nice enough that, like, you know, if one day, God's willing, it's in a bookstore, like this is something that someone wants to pick up. And so at the time I didn't have the iPad that I have now. So everything was literally strictly paper and watercolor and pencil. So my dad is the artist in the family. Yeah, my sister is too. I like to draw as well, but I won't say that I'm as good as my dad. I'm good, but I'm not as good as my dad. My dad is that person who can, you know, just like that, just draw and just, it looks so lifelike.
Wow.
So I had him draw a lot of the pictures. So like the scenes specifically that have to do with Jamaica's landscape, I really wanted him to draw that because with it being his upbringing, who better to draw these pictures than someone who was, you know, more familiar with like the everyday of, you know, living in Jamaica and all these different things. And so I wanted him to do those kind of drawings. And so he did a lot of those, and then we kind of stopped in the middle of it because, you know, he's really busy, so it was kind of hard to, like, you know, have him draw every single picture. And so I actually started looking into like Jamaican illustrators because I really wanted that essence of Jamaica to come through in the book, because I was, you know, I knew my dad was really busy. I didn't want to overburden him with stuff. And so I started looking into Jamaican illustrators, and then I realized that prices are a little too high and I just couldn't afford those things. So I was like, yeah, we're just going to stick to self-illustrating these things. So, a few years passed, 2016, you know, we're still slowly working through these illustrations, 2017, still working through it. And in the meantime, I'm doing research for like, how do you self-publish, all these different things. And then 2018, I got an iPad completely out of the blue. I didn't know that my parents were going to give me an iPad, but I got an iPad for Christmas, and they knew that I really wanted to, you know, start drawing more and learn to do so digitally. And so I was really grateful for that because now it made the whole process of illustrating that much easier. And so since we already had like quite a few pictures drawn out on, you know, sketch paper, and we actually already had some of these things, my dad was the person who drew, I was the person who painted, because I was always really good at painting. I transferred all those images, physical images, onto my iPad and started kind of just redrawing all of them. So I redrew every single one of them and re-illustrated all of them. Recolored everything, And it made it a lot easier to actually make it into an actual book, because now I didn't have to actually scan these physical images and worry about colors and all these different things. And so that was 2018, 2019. And then this time last year, I was still illustrating. And a lot of illustrating. I think it took a lot of getting used to illustrating digitally, because it's a really weird thing when you're first using, you know, like digital illustrations and things like that, when you're so used to drawing by hand. Early 2020, that's what I was doing most of the time, is just drawing and illustrating, continuing to illustrate these images. And I made a lot of mistakes, a whole lot of mistakes. Illustrating a book is a whole new thing, because you have to worry about like the binding and like where the image, you can't draw too far into the middle, because you don't want the crease of the book to like hide, you know, your drawing. So when you open the book, you don't want, you know, your drawing to be right in that center. You have to worry about like DPI, which is like dots per inch. I don't know. People who are more, you know, like tech savvy in that sense might know what that means. But DPI is like, I think it's dots per inch, I think. But you have to worry about like the resolution and like all these different things, because you don't want it to be too pixelated. So I had to redraw these pictures like at least 3 times over. And then it was just a matter of actually like formatting. And then I remember I had to like go through and learn how to copyright, learn how to just like situate, like what text should I use that are more kid friendly, that, you know, isn't too rigid, because, you know, kids really respond to like rounder text. And so I had to study all those things and figure out what text would work best. And then even just illustrating a lot of the illustrations I ended up doing on my own. So a lot of the pages are actually split like evenly, like some my dad did, some I did. And then the cover art, I had to figure out like, I remember I was sitting in the parking lot of my mom's store and I was like sitting there with my iPad, like, what do I want this front cover to look like? And I just like drew this random sketch, and then it became the cover that we know now, of Fly Doctor Fly. So yeah,
that's amazing.
it was a journey.
That's such a long journey, but it's so good to see that it worked out the way that you wanted it to. And now I'm seeing that it's on Amazon. So talk a little bit about how it is to like independently publish, because it sounds like it's a lot of work of trying to basically pitch your book to people, basically.
Yeah. For sure. I knew early on that I didn't want to go the traditional route of like, you know, HarperCollins and like all these other amazing publishing houses. I just felt like, you know, who am I? I'm this small little person with this idea. And, you know, there's already like so few, you know, Black books, children's books, that, you know, I really just didn't want to have to deal with all that. But also, I went into this knowing I wanted to write a book, but I didn't know exactly how do I go about doing all of that. So I didn't really look into the traditional ways of publishing. And plus, when you do want to publish a book through one of those huge publishing houses, you have to be represented by an agent. And I was just a college student. I'm a college freshman. I don't know anything about this. So I just, you know, self-publishing was becoming more and more popular. And at the time, it was Amazon KDP, what it is today, was once CreateSpace. So back in 2016, that's what it was. And that's what I was beginning to use. And so it can be hard to pitch your book when you publish particularly through Amazon, only because Amazon doesn't necessarily, so if you publish your book through Amazon, you don't necessarily have your own imprint, if that makes sense. So like HarperCollins is an imprint, Simon and Schuster is an imprint. So Random House, for example, Penguin Random House is an imprint. So to have your own name on your book as a publisher, that gives you more power in being able to go to bookstores and say, hey, I want to have this book. would you be interested in carrying it? All these different things. So I had to learn about all of those different things of like what things will allow me to have more control over my own, what I've created. And so self-publishing was just the thing I wanted to do because one, it was more economically it was just easier in that sense. And also I knew nothing about getting an agent or, you know, going to HarperCollins and like all these things. Like I just wanted to publish a book. Mm-hmm. And so right now, I'm not going to lie, it's still something I'm learning to do, like pitching my own story and kind of self-advocating for it in that sense. I still am learning how to, you know, it's not in any bookstores just yet, but I want it to be.
Yeah.
And it was really important to me to make sure that it was published under my own publishing company per se. So like when you open the book, it says, instead of, you know, HarperCollins or something, it says Archer Press.
Yeah.
So it's just published underneath my company, I guess, which is just that name. Mm-hmm. And that just gives me more control. I have my own ISBN, my own barcode. So that gives me more control over what I've created, and allows me to be able to say, hey, I can go to whatever bookstore I want and ask, you know, pitch my story without feeling, like someone else controls my book. And so that was kind of the way I've gone about pitching, but also, I'm still learning. I'm still figuring it out because I still would love to get it into a bookstore somewhere, somehow. But yeah, it just takes a lot of like believing in yourself and like reminding yourself that your story is, you have a good story, you know, because you see other books out there and you're like, wow, these are amazing. Mine doesn't compare and it's very easy to compare yourself. But you just have to keep reminding yourself that it matters. Your story does matter.
Yeah. I'm so happy that you were able to figure all that out and not see the whole like big publishing company as something that could deter you, because I know there's probably a lot of people who may have been like, oh, I would love to write a book, but it's like, I have no agent. I don't know how to pitch myself to these companies. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people may have never thought,
for sure,
I'll just publish on my own. So that's so good that you did that.
Right.
So do you plan on writing another book?
Thank you. I would love to. And the next book I would love to write is one that I would want specifically to be focused on young girls. I always felt a little like, oh gosh, I wrote this book. And I hope that people, you know, don't think that Fly Doctor Fly is only for boys, because, you know, the main character is a boy. But it's really because the story is based off of my dad. But I really wanted to make sure that a woman was kind of like the reason why he became a doctor in that story. But I really would love to write another book. I don't know what it would be about. I have some ideas of what it would be about, but I would specifically want it to be for young girls. So I'm excited to hopefully work on that. Yeah.
Can't wait for that. So do you have, like, who would you love to own a copy of your book if there's anybody right now in this world, who would you love for them to own a copy?
Oh, that's a good question. I feel like I have a few people. I feel like, okay, Oprah is definitely one person. My dad keeps telling me, Lindsay, you should just send a book to Oprah.
You should.
And like, see if she'll take it. And I'm like, I don't know if that's how it works, but I would love for Oprah to have a copy. She has a book club, but it's mostly focused on like young adult fiction and like, you know, actual, you know, chapter books and things like that. So I don't know that would do anything, but it would be nice. And then in the medical field, there's one doctor in particular that I would love to have the book. Her name is Dr. Nadine Burke Harris. And I don't know if you know who that is, but she's currently the Surgeon General of California. And she, before that, I was like really familiar with like her work and everything, because she's a pediatrician and that's what I want to be. And she's just done so much amazing work with like just bridging disparity gaps in the Bay Area in California, and just creating a wellness center for kids and like her research, like just everything is just top tier. I absolutely love it. And it just so happens that she's Jamaican. So I would love for her to have a copy of the book. I would love that. And even if it was just in her, you know, clinic or whatever, that would be amazing. But yeah, that's definitely one person I would love to have the book.
Oh yeah, I hope that happens. Honestly, you should low-key send it to her practice.
I should. I should be like, hey. I mean, I mentioned her in the book. Like at the end of the book, there's a section of like Black history heroes in medicine. Yeah. And like, I was like, I'm making sure I'm putting her in this book. So hopefully she would see that as like a little compliment. Like, I see you, sis. I respect the work you do. Yeah.
Love that. So I want to talk about you balancing school, being an author, and then being a nonprofit founder, and by balancing school, like being pre-med. So how were you able to do all of that? Like all of this that you're saying that you've done has been during your schooling, you getting your bachelor's, you getting your MBA. So how were you able to balance all of that?
Very true. Nothing but the grace of God, first and foremost, because honestly, sometimes I'll think back and I'll be like, I don't know how I did any of that. And it really cannot be, I really can't attribute it to me, if I'm being completely honest with you, because all of that, like when I, in like even just thinking back to it right now, I'm just like, how in the world was I able to do any of that? I'm the person who like I remember, especially early on in college, I easily got stressed over like, you know, like pre-med classes and like thinking ahead of like all the classes I had to take, and like anxiety set in and all these different things. And so just thinking about all those different things and juggling all those things at once, I don't know how anything, I couldn't say it's me. It's nothing but God. But I think that part of the thing that helped is just having, like, my family is just very, very supportive. And I honestly couldn't do any of those things without them, like, saying, go ahead, like, you have that dream, go ahead and do it. And just being really supportive and being able to help with all those things. So like organizing a cookout, like that's not something I could do to fundraise for the library. Like that was my mom and my aunt, and like, you know, being able, spending all those hours of cooking and like preparing food and like all those different things, like there's no way I could have done that on my own. So for sure, it's definitely my family. And then also just, I think also just trying to your best to find a balance. I wish I had a perfect answer of how to find a balance, but I don't, because I'm still trying to figure out how to create a balance. But just taking those times to just give yourself that room to breathe and to relax and chill, and not just, don't take on too much stuff when, you know, you're already feeling like you're overextending yourself. But other than that, I don't know how all of that has transpired outside of the grace of God. I really don't.
Amen. So what do you usually do to like de-stress or to basically unwind? Because I know you've talked about before, like not wanting to feel like you're always overworking yourself. So what do you usually do to like relax?
I love music. Music is like my best friend. I love music. So I'll listen to music. I'll try my best to be away from social media. That, I mean, there used to be times where years past, I would like just completely disappear off of social media completely. And that was really helpful. But sometimes that's just not, you know, you have to really examine why you're doing that. And sometimes it can be a healthy thing. Sometimes it's not. And so I don't do that as much now, but on a typical day, I really love music. I love watching movies. I feel like I'm a self-proclaimed film critic. I love watching movies. I love watching, I love movies. And, I'll just, you know, that will be a good way for me to just like relax and like pay attention to another story that's not my own. And just like, if I don't know how to handle whatever it is in my own life, like I'll just watch a movie and enjoy like knowing that there's a, you know, a beginning and an end to that story, knowing that there's, you know, whatever problem is in that story, in that movie, like it's going to be solved by the end of it. I love reading. And journaling is something that I really love doing. It's not something I always like, you know, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm gonna go journal right now, but it's something I try to force myself to do, because it allows me to like express myself. Because I'm not very good at like, sometimes I'm that person where I bottle everything in, and I'll just like, okay, you know, like that meme with that like that dog, and he's like sitting with fire around him, and he's like, oh, this is fine. Yeah, that's sometimes me. I'll like bottle everything in and just like not express myself as much as I should. And so journaling helps me to like actually talk about whatever it is that I'm feeling. So that those are things that that help me kind of find my space. Yeah.
That's good. So what have you learned about yourself during the pandemic?
I think one of the things, well, this sounds kind of bad, but one of the things I think I learned early on is I remember when everyone was like talking about, oh, you know, like we can't go out, we can't go to a club anymore, we can't do any of these things. Like, and I'm just sitting here and I'm like, well, I'm an ambivert with a lot of introverted tendencies. Yeah. So, you know, being at home wasn't horrible for me at first. And so I think one of the things I learned was that I do enjoy my own company. And like, you know, this is really a prime time for people who are a little bit more introverted in the sense that they like their own space. So I think that's one thing I learned, that I really enjoy, like, I enjoy my own space. Not to say that I don't have cabin fever and I like don't, you know, want to go out and have that freedom of being able to just do whatever I want and go out. But I do enjoy my own space. So I think that's one of the things I learned. And I also learned that I really love just figuring out how I can help in whatever way. And I remember at the beginning of the pandemic, that was something that like kind of overstressed me. And I was like, oh gosh, there's this pandemic. Like how can Root Strong help? And, you know, I think that is a good thing, but also a bad thing. So that's one of the things that I learned, is that you can't overpressure yourself with like the burdens of the world. Because one person can't solve everything. One little organization can't solve everything. And you have to really, there's power in community and being able to work with other people and kind of just like finding that balance. But I've kind of had to like calm myself down and be like, okay, Lindsay, you can't do everything. Like, just chill and like try to pay attention to yourself as well. Like, you know, the world might be falling apart, but don't, you know, in the middle of you falling apart, don't also, you know, throw yourself out there to try and solve the world when you don't have all the answers just yet. So those are a few of the things that I learned during the pandemic.
Yeah, that's very real. So the final question that I have, so what's next for Lindsay Root Strong and you being an author? Is there like any initiatives that you want to like talk about right now that you want to praise or like let people know about?
Yeah, we're Root Strong is planning a literacy program for high school students here in Detroit, and it'll be hopefully launching. It's going to be a mentorship program, literacy program dash mentorship program, coming hopefully by the start of the new school year, so September. And I'm really excited about that, but it'll be virtual. That will be kind of our method of kind of programming. And hopefully we can get some people to volunteer and like support kids and just connect with the youth that we'll be serving. But it'll be really, really cool. And I'm excited about it. And I'm really grateful to even have a team now, because for the past, you know, 5 years, it's been me and my mom. And 2020, we, you know, finally have our own team. And so it takes a lot of the burden off and helping to like balance a lot of the workload and kind of getting these fresh and new ideas. But yeah, so I'm really excited that we're all able to work on that together.
That's amazing. So please plug yourself, your organization, where can people buy the book?
Yeah, okay, so let's talk about the 10,000 Instagram pages I have. So I'm not even going to talk about my blog page because that's just going to add to the confusion. Yeah. But my main page is on Instagram is Lindsay Archer, lindsay.archer. So LYNDSAY.archer. And then my nonprofit's page, Rootstrong, is at Rootstrong, RootsStrong. And then Fly Doctor Fly is Fly Doctor Fly on Instagram. You can purchase the book on my website at lindsayarcher.com. And Lindsay spelled with a Y instead of an I. And then my nonprofit's website is rootstrong.org. I'm trying to like keep track of all these things in my mind as I'm saying to make sure I'm not like confusing people. But yeah, that's like the gist. Hopefully in the details, there'll be more information like
linked directly all of this to everything. In the show notes, yeah. So you guys can see, go follow, go purchase a book. You guys can check out the website, learn more about what Lindsay is doing. I want to say thank you so much, Lindsay, for being on the season premiere of season 3 of Unorthodox Real. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Oh, no problem.
I'm honored. I'm so honored to be here.
And thank you guys so much for listening. You guys can follow me at Unorthodox Real.
Bye.